Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Education Committee to order at 8:02 a.m. Today is Monday, April 3rd. This morning we have present Senator Stevens, Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, and Senator Beckage, and myself, Chair Hughes. Thanks for those assisting us. Remember your cell phone etiquette. And today we're going to hear Senate Concurrent Resolution 5, Alaska Reads Day, sponsored by Senator Gardner. And it will establish March 2nd as Alaska Reads Day. We also have a hearing on House Bill 64, the Reading Proficiency Task Force, Dyslexia by Representative Drummond, which has been a bipartisan effort that has a companion bill sponsored by Senator Dunleavy. And HB 64 will establish a task force to look at the issue of dyslexia and help address the problem of low reading proficiency among our students in Alaska. We also have a hearing scheduled today on SB 96, the Education Transformation Act, but we don't have the CS back yet. So my intention is to have the committee recess after we've heard these other bills at the call of the chair, and at that point we'll take up the CS, go over the changes, and if it's the will of the committee, we'll be passing it out. And my staff will work with members to figure out what time of day that'll work for everyone. So at this point, I am actually going to be handing over the gavel to Senator Giesel, who's going to chair, because I have to be up in press availability. So with that, look forward to hearing how the presentations go on these bills. So thank you, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, first item on our agenda today is Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5. So, I would welcome Senator Gardner and her staff. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Berta Gardner. I represent Spinard, Midtown, and the UMed District in Anchorage, and I'm joined by my wonderful staffer, Megan Holland. Appreciate you giving us the opportunity to present this bill, which would proclaim March 2nd, 2018 as Alaska Reads Day. Early literacy has been a passion of mine for decades, not only for my state, but in my own family. Two of my three children have various levels of dyslexia, and I've seen firsthand the difficulties of struggling with reading from a young age. And while my own children have grown to be successful and independent and are raising their own families, I wonder how different their stories might have been had they not had the resources and support that they did growing up and in school. I've been to a lot of conferences about reading proficiency and education issues, and I've heard many experts speak on the personal, social, and economic consequences of poor proficiency rates, particularly if they're by the third grade. I heard military officials state that poor reading proficiency is a national security issue, as too many recruits are unable to read manuals and to complete necessary tasks due to their poor reading skills. Alaska students rate second to last nationally in fourth grade reading proficiency, and efforts to improve that has not been very successful. So I introduced this resolution at the request of an advocate, Madam Chair. I'm not actually a huge fan of resolutions. I think you know that. However, I am a fan of multi-pronged approaches to improving our literacy rates, policy, funding, technology, teacher training, as well as early childhood. A quality early childhood education, pre-K, has a role in the solution. I hope that this resolution helps to increase awareness, early exposure, and to connect existing organizations within our communities to families in need of support. The resolution is part of a national effort taking place called the National Read Across America Day. We've borrowed their language, and it's already developed a number of free resources for American schools and communities. I encourage the committee to consider SJR 5 as a small, simple part of a large and more complex set of efforts to improve reading proficiency, and I thank you for your time. And then my intern, Megan, will be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator Gardner. Questions from committee members? Senator Gardner, we've talked about the low reading proficiency scores for a long time. Has anyone identified what the cause is?
Not to my awareness, not to my knowledge, I would assume, this is Senator Gardner, I would assume that part of it has to do with more TV watching instead of reading. I don't think families read as much. I know I myself read less and do, just live my life differently. So that's a part of it, and we have to sort of adapt our strategies to take that into consideration. But there aren't really any shortcuts. It's a matter of time and practice. And there's a world of wonderful literature out there for children. I mean, much more, I think, than when I was a child. But it's a matter of modeling behavior, and it's a matter of valuing it, which many families, I think, have gotten away from. You know, kids go to school. Sometimes they're simply not ready for the day. It's nutrition, it's sleep, it's organization, it's focus. I mean, that's what we need to provide for all of our children. But there are families that aren't able to do that as well as other families, and I think that impacts their children's readiness for not just reading, but for all aspects of school, but reading in particular. Because if you can't read well, it doesn't matter how well your math skills are developing. You're limited in how far you can go without reading.
Sure. So we hear that the scores are low, and of course they're aggregated scores for the whole state. Are there particular schools or school districts that are performing better in terms of reading competency?
Madam Chair, that's an interesting question. A couple of years ago, my staffer did a little graph about basically, it wasn't reading specifically, but certainly integrally tied, school successes and school rankings compared to income levels in various places across the state. And I had assumed that the small places with smaller schools would do better. That really wasn't the case. But they did. There was a correlation between income level and proficiency. It's not hard and fast, and it isn't necessarily causal, but, in families where people buy books for their kids or magazine subscriptions and things like that, it's easy to encourage it. In families that have libraries open year-round, there are communities that do, and there are a lot of communities where the school might have the only library, and if it's closed for months out of the year, how do kids maintain their skills, let alone increase them? So that makes it more difficult.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I couldn't agree with you more on the importance of early literacy. But what would happen on this day? What would occur that would help to improve kids' reading skills?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I think that it would take some publicity to make sure that it's that people are aware of it. I think that organizations like PTAs may very well take up the banner. They already do sponsor a lot of reading activities, libraries, different organizations, and also Megan might be aware of other activities.
Other organizations?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Stevens.
You could identify yourself for the record.
My name is Megan Holland, intern to Senator Gardner. I don't have a list on hand of other organizations that might be able to take part in making this day a success, but I could certainly compile one and provide it to the committee.
Follow-up, Senator Stevens?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not so much interested in organizations, but what would be the activities that would actually, in the end, result in more kids reading? I mean, what are we talking about, giving books away? Or are we talking about evenings where books are read to kids? Or what would actually happen that would improve the situation?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I believe looking at if we were to mirror the national effort, I believe for the most part it is holding events where people read to kids, where they spread awareness of the importance of the issue and early exposure to language and literature. Giving books away could certainly be a part of that, but I believe for the most part it is a focus on reading out loud to kids, whether that's in school and also holding events outside of school hours, providing connecting parents with resources and just talking about the importance of this issue.
Follow-up, okay. Senator
Just a personal comment. I spent the weekend at home with my three-year-old granddaughter. Three and a half, she likes to remind me. And I read so many Mercer Mayer books to her that I am fed up to hear with Mercer Mayer now. But it is wonderful. I mean, it just opens the world to these children.
Madam Chair, if I might, Senator Gardner here. Years ago, when I was active with the PTA in elementary school, we used to have an annual read to kids night at school, but the kids would come to school in their pajamas, and there would be small groups reading different kinds of stories, and depending on age level and interest, they could pick where they went, which room, and what kind of story they had. And I think that kids like being read to, in my experience, even well beyond the time that they read to themselves. You know, it is a quality time.
Good. Further questions? So I have an additional question, Senator Gardner. You know, we have this Best Beginnings program that actually distributes books. Do you know what kind of impact that program has had? It's been around for a while.
Madam Chair, I don't know directly. I used to have concerns about it because I thought there were lots of children who were getting books from Best Beginnings that didn't need that help because their families got them books. But I had a conversation with my constituent, Mrs. Hensley, who has been the heart and soul of the effort in Alaska, and she explained to me that while they were prohibited by the regulations of the program from choosing children who qualified or didn't qualify, what they did do is look at zip codes. And if children were in a zip code with a certain income level, they would focus their effort of outreach on those zip code areas. So if a family went to a pediatrician, for example, in a neighborhood that was generally low income, that pediatrician's office would have a lot of information about Best Beginnings, and those families would have more opportunities to learn about it and to participate. And it seemed like a good way of doing it. It wasn't that they were excluding people or picking who got to participate, but they focused their efforts where there might be the biggest bang for the buck. There used to be a program also at ANMC in the pediatrician's waiting room where an organization used to provide a free book to every child who was there, and I don't know if that is still in practice. I'm a little bit outside of that effort now, but that's the kind of thing where kids, you know, every kid loves a new book, even if they have a big library.
Yes, Ms. Hensley actually used to be my constituent as well. I believe she's moved. But it would be interesting to know if that organization has seen any impact from their efforts. You know, another thing I noticed, I was at the airport a couple weeks ago in Anchorage, and over in the concourse where Raven and some of the smaller airlines are and shared services for the oil company and so forth, there's a very large display of books that are free for children. It's over where the passengers would wait for their flight. And so I thought that was very interesting. I can't remember who the sponsors were, but I believe the state PTA organization was part of it. So that was pretty interesting. Good. Any further questions for Senator Gardner? All right. Thanks very much. This has no fiscal note, I'm assuming.
Correct.
Good. Well, thanks very much for presenting it. We will set it aside for review at a later time. Thank you.
Thank you.
So going on and closely aligned or same subject matter, we're going to move now to House Bill 64. This is a bill sponsored by Representative Drummond, and her staff is here to present it. It also deals with reading proficiency, creating a task force. So welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Kristen Cronendunk, and I'm staff to Representative Drummond. She apologizes for not being here. She's in another meeting right now. She also wanted me to thank Senator Dunleavy on the record for bringing this legislation to our attention. It's been a pleasure working with his office on this bill. House Bill 64 creates a task force that will examine how current regulations affect reading proficiency outcomes with the goal of increasing statewide reading scores within 3 years. Approximately 47,000 students in Alaska did not meet state standards in 2015. Students who cannot read by third grade are four times more likely to drop out of school than those who can read. HB 64 establishes a 15-member task force to look at reading proficiency and instruction and see how we can improve. The task force will consist of 3 members of the House, 3 members of the Senate, the Commissioner of Education, who will be a non-voting member, an active or retired K through 3 teacher with significant experience teaching reading, a member who represents either the Alaska Association, the Association of Alaska School Boards or the Alaska Council of School Administrators, a member representing the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, a member representing the University of Alaska, and 4 members representing nonprofit organizations that focus on issues related to reading, including 1 member who is a parent with a child with a reading disability. The task force will meet at least 6 times, between 6 and 10 times, and will submit a report to the governor and DEED by January 31st, 2018. None of the members on the task force will be, everything will be done telephonically. There will be no travel reimbursement, so there's a 0 fiscal note on this bill as well. And I can answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you very much, Kristen. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how will the task force know if the regulations affect outcomes? How will they find that out? How will they figure that out?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the goal of the task force is to get educators at the table with legislators, and we'll talk about what we know is working right now and see ways that we can take those successful things that are already being done and open that up to make sure more kids are getting those successful programs. We don't have a tracking mechanism in place with the bill. I believe that would add a fiscal note, so it wasn't included.
Follow-up, Senator Stevens?
No, I think that's, I think that's pretty key to if the goal is to figure out if regulations affect outcomes, there has to be some means to do that, it seems to me. Thank you.
Good. Further questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
This is maybe we need to talk to our departments, our school officials. But it'd be interesting to me that there hasn't already been some look into this. And so maybe to the sponsor, has there been other reports, other efforts at looking at reading proficiency within the system in Alaska to date that have given us any keys that it looks like you've already landed on dyslexia being one of the main elements to deal with? Has that not been looked at or studied? Have the proficiency scores of Alaska students not been studied to date?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I believe that we have quite a bit of information on reading in the state. We just have not come together with the legislature and with the people working in classrooms and working on these issues. And so the goal of the task force is to kind of bring both of those stakeholders to the table to find ways that the legislature, without creating more mandates or anything like that, but ways we can help teachers in the classroom. So it would be taking information that we have, looking for ways to find new information. We have a lot of organizations that are working on these issues, but this would be a way for them to come together and collaborate on the information that they have.
Kristen, just so you know, Posey Boggs with the Alaska Reading Coalition is online, and she may be able to flesh out a bit more of that answer for Senator Coghill. Posey, can you hear us?
Yes, hi, this is Posey Boggs.
Welcome. Did you hear Senator Coghill's question, or would you like it repeated?
I would like it repeated, please.
All right, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question that I posed was with the reading proficiency knowledge in Alaska, and we're looking at putting a task force on, you know, collecting data on the proficiency and recommending some things. Has that not already had some work in Alaska, knowing where our proficiency is doing well and where it's not doing so well, and some recommendations that have come forward? Have those recommendations not already been either recommended or are forthcoming. I'm trying to get to, do we need a task force or have we already got some of this information available to us?
So, Senator Coghill, through the chair, we do know a lot about reading proficiency in Alaska, and we've been looking at it for many years through the National Assessment of Educational Progress Measure. We've taken a deep dive into the state's standard-based assessments, and even the new or flash-in-the-pan Alaska Measures of Progress. All of these tests that look at reading show that our reading proficiency is completely stagnant, going back decades, not going back just a few years. And we see the outcome in the fact that so many of our best students who graduate high school and go to the university have to take remedial reading. So there's something off there. Plus, when we look at the incarceration rate in Alaska, and we do look at a little bit, I have a little bit of data on the reading proficiency level of 50 random kiddos at McLaughlin. All of them, I think the number was 86% of them, had classical troubles with reading that could, you know, definitely indicate, I mean, lead to frustration and behavior that could lead kids to someplace like McLaughlin. So while we do have a lot of information, and I do know that people have worked very hard on the reading issues in Alaska, outcomes are not changing. We're not getting better. Now, there's some districts that are very, very low, and there's some districts that are having our normal outcome, which is inadequate. There is a difference between some districts. Now, the issues in Alaska mirror a lot of issues in a lot of other rural states, especially states that only have one university system where teachers go in for preparation. What we do know is that our teachers who we hire, especially in K-3, if they do not have the foundational knowledge about how to teach reading, they are not going to be able to help our kids. What we do know is that highly knowledgeable and skilled teachers of reading do matter on outcomes. And that's what we view the task force being able to accomplish, is really looking at what we can do to increase and fix our reading problem in the state. I hope that answers your question.
Follow up, Senator Coghill.
Well, yes and no. I know it lends itself to a debate that I've heard only some about, and that is the difference between memorizing words, going into phonetics. It goes into a debate that probably I'd go way over my head in a heartbeat on. But if does this task force then, in your opinion, is it going to be able to get to those questions that end up both philosophical and or political in that arena?
So my hope, sir, is that instead of answers being political or philosophical, we have so much scientific evidence about what we need our teachers to know that it really should not be a question anymore. However, the politics and philosophy is just extremely difficult to just beat down and have people reboot and recalibrate their knowledge based on the science that shows us exactly how to teach 95% of all the kids out here to read, no matter whether they're dyslexic kids, English as a second language, whether they're in poverty or not in poverty. It really is about the knowledge level. And I could also encourage people to think it's not just phonics versus something else. It's what we know now goes so far beyond just phonics or just, they used to call it a whole language. It's so far beyond that that the science just is, it's what counts in outcomes.
Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
I think that's a fair statement, and I'd be interesting to see how both our university, our teaching staff, as they are, feel about this, because it's really an indictment on our education system in many ways. So, you know, and if we're trying to improve it, does a task force get to the root of it, or is it just something that has a centrifugal force that never finds an answer? So I guess that's my cynicism at this point, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Kristen, when I look at the task force, I see it as an attempt to sort of tap into what Senator Coghill has just referred to, which is there are a lot of different studies out there, a lot of different things, pieces, but no one has ever systemically tried to really, in this state anyway, at least in modern times, no one's tried to assemble these and to take a real look at them. And that's why I think the longer time period is involved. It goes till 19 to 2019. So we have more time, and the idea is to try to create a systemic, isn't it, to try to create a systemic view of how we do reading in Alaska comprehensively, how we look at everything from dyslexia to general reading proficiency, and the issue that's come up in this committee numerous times, which is preparation for college. Is that the goal of the bill, the task force?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, to put it simply. We know that you need more than a task force to change education in the state, but we feel Representative Drummond feels this is the place to start to get all the cards on the table and what we have, what we know is working, and the report that would be sent to the governor in January of 2018 would not be the conclusion of the task force. We would still go through 2018 to make sure that those recommendations are working and having an impact on reading scores throughout the state. And it is for all readers, not just dyslexia. So that is a component of it, because we know dyslexia affects a lot of students. And we know that changing the way we look at dyslexia is a good place to start. So that's one of the fundamentals of the task force. But it is for all readers in Alaska right now.
Follow-up, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a mess of information. I mean, that's the word I would use, a mess of information that's created, you know, confusing ideas of what works or what doesn't work. We're often up here, the four or five of us are often up here going, well, isn't it true that, and then we fill in the blank with whatever, you know, study we may have read or looked at. So I guess the advantage I see and why I co-sponsored Senator Dunleavy's bill was because I just want to see a systemic approach to it, and so I'm hoping that that's what we get. And I guess on the record, I want to say I would urge you, should this pass, to ensure that we really do reach a systemic approach to reading that says here's a map, and the end of this process is the beginning of following the map for how we improve reading proficiency in the state of Alaska. Without it, we're really failing our kids. So I like where you're going with this. I like where Representative Drummond's going with this, and Senator Dunleavy. I think it merits consideration, and thank you for bringing it forward. But please make it systemic. Don't just create a list of new recommendations that we can all ignore. Let's actually do something that lays out a roadmap for what our steps should be, and as Senator Stevens put it, what our expected outcomes ought to be.
Thank you, Senator Begich. So a question, Kristen. I have this document, which was transmitted to us from the committee chair, and it is Alaska Measures of Progress, Spring 2015, and it gives percentage of students in grades 3 through 10 who have either met the standards or partially met the standards. Did that come from Representative Drummond's office? Have you seen this?
To the chair, yeah, that document was part of our bill packet. We got the information. One of the supporters of this bill is the NAACP, and they pulled that information off of the deed website and then extrapolated it based on students K through 12, not just 3 through 12, I believe.
Okay, on the document we have, it's just grades 3 through 10.
Okay.
And it does show it comes from deed January 15th, 2016. So it's not fresh data, but certainly reflective. And in terms of meeting the standards in English language skills, it goes from 35% at grade 3. At grade 10, it says 28%. I mean, it's pretty jaw-dropping. Then there's the partially meets standards, and at third grade, about 65% of students partially meet the standards. It improves somewhat by grade 10, but that's pretty interesting information. I'm sure committee members must have it somewhere. But that certainly substantiates the problem. In looking at Representative Drummond's bill, I just compared it to Senator Dunleavy's bill, and I just wanted to ask a couple questions about there are differences in the two bills. It looks like Representative Drummond decided to include dyslexia, which wasn't part of Senator Dunleavy's bill.
Yeah, to the chair, there are several changes, and we did work with Senator Dunleavy's office about all of them. And I can briefly walk through exactly what the changes are between his bill and our bill, if you would like.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. So on page 1, lines 11 and 12, language was changed to recognize the work the state is already doing for students while still acknowledging that it could be improved. It was just a verbiage change there. On page 2, line 27, Section C was added to examine what education reforms have already been implemented and to look at why those changes have worked or have not worked. On page 2, from line 27 until page 3, line 2, the language was changed in this section to clear up the scope of the task force. During our committee bill or our hearing on the House side, it was slightly unclear whether this task force would be able to recommend funding things that the legislature would have to fund. So we want to make it abundantly clear that that was something that would not be under the scope of the task force. On page 4, line 1, we switched this to allow one member to represent either the Association of Alaska School Boards or the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We talked with both organizations, and they were comfortable with that change. On page 4, lines 4 and 5, we removed the language that had a non-voting judge or lawyer as a member. We consulted with Department of Law, and judges are supposed to be nonpartisan and shouldn't really be on a task force like this. So that was removed at their request. On page 4, line 13, excuse me, we changed language to recognize we had the Alaska Reading Coalition recommending members, and we changed that to recognize all nonprofit organizations focused on reading and education issues, so we weren't leaving anyone out that might have an interest in this task force. And then, like you said, we on page 4, line 31, we did add a definition of dyslexia, and we worked with several organizations that deal with dyslexia to come up with the correct definition. We chose not to do the DSM definition that are put on IEPs just because the way those are worded, the way they're worded in IEPs, you have to have, we know that there are some undiagnosed students with dyslexia, and their definition is so narrow you need an IEP first before you have dyslexia. And I believe Posey, if she's still on the line, may be able to speak to that specific part better than I could. But those are the changes that we made, and my understanding is that Senator Dunleavy is okay with all of those changes.
Great, thank you. Ms. Boggs, are you still on the line, and would you like to elaborate on the definition of dyslexia, why the wording was chosen as it was?
Yes, ma'am. when I love thinking about the definition of dyslexia because it we have quite a few, and Kristen is exactly right. If we use the DSM-5 definition, it will leave out actually the majority of students with dyslexia because the majority of students with dyslexia are unidentified, undiagnosed, and do not receive services under an IEP. They are in the regular classroom. The International Dyslexia Association's definition is wonderful if you're a scientist. And it is a couple of paragraphs long. This definition comes from the Arkansas Dyslexia Bill. It was short, it was sweet, and it was clear. So that's why our international dyslexia branch and our grassroots parent group called Decoding Dyslexia encouraged us to use this definition.
Great, thank you. Ms. Boggs, could you tell us how long has the Alaska Reading Coalition been in place?
The Alaska Reading Coalition, which is made up of the NAACP, the Alaska branch of the International Dyslexia Association, Decoding Dyslexia Alaska, Literate Nation Alaska, and I believe we now also have the ALP, Alaska Literacy Program, on board, including, in addition, about a dozen private tutors who teach these children to read when our school system is not able to do so. The coalition came together about 24 months ago, and we kept just real private, trying to think about what to do and how we could all work together. So as a coalition, it's quite young, but the depth of knowledge backing it up in the member groups goes back pretty far. I think the Dyslexia International Dyslexia Association up here was started, I think, 2009, and it is part of a 60-year-old international organization.
Thank you. Very, very helpful information. I guess that part of the reason I asked that question is that's one of the differences between Senator Dunleavy's bill and Representative Drummond's bill is on page 4, lines, it's item E, ECHO, capital letter E, the four members. And Senator Dunleavy's bill actually called out the Alaska Reading Coalition. I'm concerned, but that's not really in a negative sense, that they aren't actually spelled out as an organization that would be a source of at least some of these four members identified in letter E. Kristen.
Yeah, to the chair, we worked with Legislegal on this section of the bill, and the Alaska Reading Coalition is made up of a lot of member organizations, but they aren't I don't know that they're a recognized 501c3. They have a Facebook page, but they don't have a website. And we just were concerned that a nonprofit organization that works on reading but is not officially a member of the Alaska Reading Coalition wouldn't be allowed to recommend names for the task force. And there was some concern that they might have they could have a case for being excluded. So that's why we changed that. All the members of the Alaska Reading Coalition, we have been working with them closely. We're very excited to have their nominations for task force members should this bill pass, and we would love their expertise on it. We just didn't want to exclude any other nonprofits.
Great explanation. Thank you for that. And I appreciate in letter E that you include a member who is a parent of a child. That was a good addition, I thought. Any other questions for Kristen about the bill?
Not on the bill.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
But there is a document that was given us in this that is dated December 10, 2015, and it has it's got no reference as to who wrote it, and it would be kind of nice to know what the issue was, or who wrote it. It's dated December 10, and it's Dear Alaska School Board, and it doesn't have a signature on it. It doesn't have a source represented, so if you can get that, it'd be interesting to know who wrote this. Also, it looks like this, before we can move this recommendation forward, we're going to have to become somewhat informed on dyslexia, and I think the anecdotal is probably not going to be enough for me, that we know all students are more dyslexic. I don't know that, you know, and I know that you have people who have a long expertise in this who are advocates, and I think that there are other opinions out there, and I'm going to search them out, but if we're going to move forward with that in this task force, I'm probably going to have to get a lot more comfortable with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Kristen.
Through the chair to Senator Coghill, I will certainly get you the information in the backup document, and my understanding is that Senator Hughes is going to have public testimony at a later date, and at that time we have quite a few dyslexia experts that we could have on the line. And we could ask them to provide more information about dyslexia before then.
Thank you.
Good. Further questions on House Bill 64? Well, I'll just comment, you know, we talk a lot about civics education, which we all significantly support. We are behind wanting our kids to be able to read. In fact, the founders identified three reasons for education. Was reading, mathematics, and the basic understanding of religion. We've kind of fallen down on the reading part. The other thing that was interesting, I heard someone comment just last week that God chose to communicate with us through words and reading. So it is important. So, Kristen, I appreciate you presenting the bill today. We will set it aside. As you said, we'll have public testimony at another time. So thanks very much. So at this point, in anticipation of the committee substitute for Senate Bill 96, the Senate Education Committee will be at a recess to call of the chair, hopefully later today. So at this time, we'll recess. Let the record reflect. The time is 8:43 a.m.
We're back on the record. This is the Senate Education Committee reconvening today at 12:06. And present with me are Senator Stevens, Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, and Senator Beckage, and myself, Chair Hughes. And at this point in our meeting, I'd like to entertain a motion regarding the CS. Senator Giesel?
Madam Chair, I move the work draft CS for Senate Bill 96, version 30LS0452/M, as in Mighty Matsu, before the committee.
And for the purposes of discussion, I'll object. And with that, I will ask our committee aide, Joshua Banks, to please come to the table and walk us through the changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Joshua Banks, staff to the Senator Hughes. And I'll be briefly going over the changes made from version T to version M. And the first change is to the title. We're making a few changes to the title in order to focus on the specific issues affected by the bill rather than have broad issues such as education that was in the original bill. We felt it might be best to focus the topics that were discussed in the title. The second change is on page 3, line 6, and we're adding language to allow a student to challenge out of a career and technical education course. That was brought up in both public testimony and invited testimony as a suggestion.
Madam Chair, can we ask questions now, or do you want to wait till later?
Go. You may ask now. Senator Stevens.
How can we make sure that there's some standards here? That it sounds to me like allowing people to challenge, it could be easily abused. How do school districts make sure that some standards are used, and I would see what they would be reasonable standards?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the standards will be set by school districts. From my understanding with speaking with the School Board Association, there are a number of districts that already allow this. This would just put in statute, and it would give the authority to the school district to make those standards.
Well, I'd hope that they would be serious standards.
Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Moving on to page 3, the report that was in version T relating to administrative employees and certain ratios, that brought some concern to various school districts, the School Board Association, and just due to the amount of work that it might require. And in speaking with the Department of Education, most of that information, if not all that information, I believe, is already submitted to the department. And rather than requiring the districts to have an additional report, we felt that the department agreed to this, that they would be able to compile that information within a report that's already submitted to the legislature under AS 1403-078A. And that report, the department would also send that to school districts, and the districts would either post the portion of the report to their district on their website or some other easily accessible means. The ratios that were in version T remain the same. Administrative employees to students, administrative employees to teachers, and teachers to students. In version M, we also defined administrative employee, which means a certificated employee who does not provide direct classroom instruction for students as a regular part of the employee's job.
What line is that on, Joshua, that definition?
I'm sorry. That is on page 4, lines 19 through 21, the definition of administrative employee. And moving on, the next change is on page 5.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joshua, it was mentioned by one of the testifiers about the idea of some employees are funded with federal grants or non-state grants. And I don't see any reference to that in the reporting. You know, we had talked possibly about adjusting that. Is that something that was just omitted, or is it something that we're just going to leave to the department to figure out? Either way is fine. I just want to know in case I get a call.
through the chair, Senator Begich, that is a point that we had discussed, and that was omitted in version M. We've discussed the possibility of differentiating between when a employee was funded through state funding through the formula or through federal grants.
And Senator Begich, I would say that we could have the department speak on that, and because in the report they're collecting, they may have that information, and it could be part of it. So that's when we get finished here, if the department can come up on that one.
So it's inadvertent, and we'll figure it out. And I'm okay with that. So.
The next change is on page 5, and it's in line line 12, it's in section 8, and we are deleting the, within the definition of administrative services, we're deleting the reference to pooling of health insurance, and due to concern that under that the state could potentially require school districts to pool their health insurance with the state. Under further up the page on line four, it discusses. Page 5 on line 4, it talks about the department may require a district to cooperate with other districts. And even though the department has stated to their knowledge that that's never happened and they don't have any plans on doing that, there was certainly concern from the school board association and the superintendents that that they would want the option to pool health insurance if it makes financial sense. In addition to that, on page 6, in line 3, the reference to a self-insurance policy under AS 3930091 is deleted, as this type of health insurance is only offered to state employees. The cooperative grant may still be used for a district to participate in group health insurance policy under AS 3930090. And also in page 6 of version M, there the sections 10-11 of version T were deleted, and due to a lot of concern from different school districts and the various associations, and due to different variables that were not considered, that weren't foreseen when the original bill was drafted. The next change is on page 13. This relates to the public school trust fund. And in speaking with the Department of Revenue, the way that the bill was originally drafted would certainly pass any constitutional hurdles and any potential trust law issues. And so we changed the sections relating to the public school trust fund back to the original version, and that includes sections 20 and 21 of version T being deleted relating to the utilization of income for the public school trust fund. Also, on page 13, lines 25 through 30 in version M, a new section is added relating to the public school trust fund, allowing the legislature to appropriate 4.75% of the market value. And this section also requires that the appropriation be used only for supporting the state public school program and to cover the administrative costs of the fund. And on page 14, line 14, AS 3714140 is repealed, as the additional section under point number 8 directs how the public school trust fund may be spent. And the last change is in the new section 23 of version M, and that is on page 14, starting on line 15. And that requires the department to analyze schools that are under 70% capacity. Due to the number of variables that were brought up in public testimony and via testimony regarding the original section 10 and 11 of SB 96, there are a number of variables that weren't under consideration, and we wanted to still look at that issue of having schools being at less than 70% capacity. And so we're having the department analyze those schools to see if it's even feasible for any of them to merge. And they will report back to the legislature next year. And some of the factors that will be considered is whether a merger of two schools will result in one of the schools being over capacity, and whether the facility is designed for grade levels for all different grade levels that are under consideration. It'll also considered the estimated savings and the estimated costs that will be associated with the school merger, and any legal or financial liabilities that the school district or the state may incur as a result of the merger. And Madam Chair, that is all the changes.
Thank you, Joshua. Senator Stevens has a question.
Chair. Just Joshua, a question of the you mentioned the grade levels, and that is some concern. I certainly think the idea of merging schools when it will work out makes enormous sense. A little concern, though, about an elementary school being placed into a high school. Can you talk a little bit more about that so we understand it and realize where this may go?
Through the Chair, Senator Stevens, that's the idea that we had, where we didn't want if a facility was designed for high schoolers, we didn't want there to be elementary school kids being put in that unless it could be remodeled in a relatively low cost. And so that's on page 15, lines 2 through 6, that's the factor that we're considering, whether or not the building is designed for the right grade levels.
And I assume that, to take into consideration, Madam Chair, a separation of the building in parts, so there would be no moving back and forth.
Through Chair Senator Stevens, that could be definitely something to be considered by the department.
Senator Begich.
If I might, Madam Chair, just to clarify, when the commissioner was here, he expressed an interest in going through each of those factors over this next interim to ensure that no unintended consequences like you're describing there, Senator Stevens, would happen. And so that's what you've tried to capture here, is that the idea would be the way that section's written reads to me as though the charge is to the commissioner to look at each of those factors and then report back to ensure that we're not doing something we don't intend to do if we're going to use, be more efficient in how we use our facilities. Is that correct, Joshua?
Through the Chair, Senator Begich, yes, that's absolutely correct. The whole purpose of this analysis is to avoid any unintended consequences that have already been brought up or even that haven't been brought up yet.
And I would say that I know the department will be reaching out to the districts, and it may even involve some travel to the districts to be able to assess the facilities. And so I just put on the record, I encourage the districts to be in conversation with the district and make sure your concerns are brought to the attention of the department so they can work through those things. So are there any other questions regarding the CS? Well, I will remove my objection. And at this time, because this was pretty much hot off the press and we didn't have it quite as early as we'd hoped, rather than moving it out at this time, we are going to hold it over till tomorrow morning, and it will be on the docket when we meet at 3:30 in the afternoon. So with that, thank you, members, for giving us part of your lunch hour, and we will adjourn at 12:20.